welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Cutforth, and special guest, the fifth Sci Guy, Noah Finn.
Number three!
This week, we're talking about feeling bad, but first, we have to thank our patrons, because they voted for this episode over on Patreon. Can you believe it? Yes, you can. That's what you do if you sign up to our Patreon. You submit and vote on topics, so thanks to you guys. Should we start the episodes?
Perhaps.
No! That's incorrect. We start with a question, you fool. You utter imbecile.
How are you doing?
That's not the question. The question is, do you have ADHD? And have you experienced rejection-sensitive dysphoria? If you want to answer that question, you can head down to the comments. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify or wherever else, get down to the comments. Or alternatively, get on a ship. Charter it to the West. Don't care where in the West, just somewhere in the West. Find a man, a tall man, and tell him to scream at the top of his lungs. We'll hear it. Answer the question, guys.
Yes.
No comment.
And another question for both of you. What is ADHD?
Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Any more information?
Yeah, so it's like a what class of thing would it be?
Neurodevelopmental condition.
That what was a least specific question. What could I?
What class
of thing is it? A disorder. I guess. Yeah,
neurodevelopmental disorder.
Well, I don't know. These things change. So, like, you could, because like, there's also a movement about ADHD where it's like it's not a disorder. There's just the neurotypicals saying that they're the normal ones.
It
like,
could be a boat. We don't know.
Well, I know it's not a boat.
How do you know that?
Well, maybe there is a boat called the ADHD.
Maybe
and if not,
there is.
We should buy one and make it called the ADHD.
Join our Patreon so that we can buy a boat and call it the ADHD. No, carry on, Luke. Carry on.
So, yeah, a neurodevent.
Oh, not, no, buddy. That's not being cut. So you can.
Okay, so it's a neurodevelopmental disorder categorized by, I would imagine, differences in multiple areas, but one of them is like executive functioning, which then affects a lot of other things. And executive functioning, I'm not even going to pretend to try and tell you what that is. But it's something to do with like executing tasks and also mood regulation. And I did try and tell you. There you go.
Very good scattered job there, Luke.
Well, I don't get to sit in front of me with a bunch of notes, do I?
No, I do. And so I'm going to tell you what it is. So I went to the NHS because, you know, they're quite good at giving you easy to understand information on this, and really it makes my job a lot easier. So the NHS says that ADHD is a condition that affects people's behavior. People with ADHD can seem restless, may have trouble concentrating, and may act on impulse. Very true. No, but yeah, ADHD, you're so right. Neurodevelopmental disorder or neurodevelopmental condition. Wow, that is a tough one to say. Mm. It was introduced to the DSM-2 in 1968. That would be the precursor to the DSM-3, the precursor to the DSM-4, and...
The DSM-5.
Don't be crazy.
Number 5.
Yes. So as I said, introduced DSM-2, 1968, as hyperkinetic reaction of childhood and later being termed ADHD. Essentially, it was a kid condition, and more specifically a condition for little boys, even more specifically little white boys. That's
just
not
like autism.
You know, well, yeah to be fair, not necessarily just little white boys, but let's be real, it was 1968. It was little white boys, and that's kind of been a problem, you know, moving forward from when it was first discovered and first sort of characterized, because if you look at only one very specific subset of people, you're gonna find different answers than if you looked at everyone. For example, Lord of the Flies probably wouldn't happen if it wasn't a bunch of rich white boys on an island, huh?
And ADHD is for everybody. Everybody deserves a little bit.
That's what the A stands for. All.
Redistribute the ADHD. Seize the means of the ADHD.
So, there are a few different things associated with ADHD, which we've kind of covered already. Inattention, hyperactivity, impulsiveness, emotional dysregulation also plays a part, which is, you know, to do with executive dysfunction, as well as you said, Luke. And we now can diagnose adults and women with ADHD. Those aren't mutually exclusive categories, by the
adults
way.
Adults and women.
An adult human woman, exactly.
No,
Luke, yeah.
No.
Can I ask a quick question? Because this is something I've read about, and I liked that you made this specific distinction where you said people with ADHD can appear hyperactive.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, I want to check this with you, basically, because I think you'll know the answer. Because you know everything, Corey. Not. Sorry, I don't want to make you uncomfortable.
Do you want to ask your bloody question, mate?
Sorry.
Not.
Not. So, the appearing hyperactive, as far as I understand that, that's basically that people with ADHD are actually understimulated and they're looking in their environment for something to stimulate them.
Oh,
but
yeah.
On the outside, it looks like they are sort of overstimulated or like hyperactive, but they're actually, it's actually like their brain almost is like an engine that's not running very well and needs a kickstart. You know, like an old engine where you sort of spin that thing and you sort of kickstart the engine.
It's a big smack on the back of the head.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
I think that's a very broad question.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? In terms of, do all people with ADHD, are they constantly understimulated? I don't know. I mean, personally, in my personal experience, I do sometimes feel quite hyperactive.
Mm.
Is that from understimulation? In a lot of cases, probably. But I don't think we can make such definitive sweeping statements about such a diverse group of people, you utter bigots.
Mm.
So moving on, we've been studying this for a bit. And the issue is that we looked at kids first, and then we realized it's not just kids, it's also adults. And a lot of the information we got from looking at children kind of impacted the information we were able to get later on. By which I mean, you know, the symptoms that you find in children aren't always consistent with the symptoms in adulthood, right? And so, yeah, there's an underdiagnosis of ADHD in adults, more specifically women, as I said, a category of adult. this kind of leads in to, you know, rejection-sensitive dysphoria. I'm kind of talking here about ADHD being underdiagnosed and in some cases understudied. Like, you know, we don't really, not that someone else is going to take the role of ADHD if ADHD calls out sick, but more understudied in the sense of...
That was a terrible joke.
I did not like that. I didn't like that at all.
More understudied in the sense that the focus has been primarily on children, and so experiences of adults have been sidelined in the sort of scientific community and broadly in research. So that brings me on to my next question for you both. What is RSD, rejection sensitive dysphoria?
Beep, 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 beep,
sorry, no, answers must be in...
Pick me, please, hello.
Answers must be in English, not in Morse code. So, Luke, would you like to ask Noah what his answer is?
Beep, 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 beep.
So, beep, beep, dot, 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 beep, 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 beep.
God, what a horrible audio experience this is turning out to be.
What a horrible editing experience this is going to be. Noah, can you answer the question, please?
It's something that, like, I don't know if it's just ADHD or just neurodivergent people in general. It's where they have, like, an extreme sensitivity to any perceived form of rejection, where it hurps them much deeper than it probably should.
It hurts them.
It hurts them, yes.
What, like herpetology?
Or herpes? Oh, God, that really hurts.
Oh, gosh. Sure. So, yeah, no, that is true. Yeah, rejection sensitive dysphoria is this sort of dysphoria, really sort of intense pain or discomfort, this sort of emotional pain because of a perceived rejection. Doesn't need to be rejection in and of itself necessarily, just perceived rejection is the main thing.
And rejection doesn't necessarily just mean like, hey, will you go out with me? No. Isn't it just like, oh,
I've never experienced
hey,
that.
It's where like someone is just like, oh, I'm doing this thing. And someone's like, actually, you're doing that wrong. And it pains them.
Yeah. I mean, rejection. Yeah, exactly. It's not just sort of being told, I don't want to do this thing with you. It could also be, as you've said, a feeling of failure. So if you feel you've not done something correctly, that's also... You know, it.
I love that I'm on this episode.
Why?
Tell
me why.
Because I was a very... my biggest fear as a child was being told off or doing something wrong.
We want to tell the story about when you cried.
So we were doing this game when you're a child and you're like 10, you're like, oh, yes, I'll go over there. Yes, I'll shit down there. And someone was like, you said the S word. I was like, no, I didn't. They're like, yeah, you did. And then I started crying because I felt so guilty about it.
Wow.
And I was like, I'm going to get in trouble. I've done something bad.
No, he says the S word all the goddamn time.
Yeah. And
you
I was 10.
You can't stop him.
I wasn't like, I can't stop him. I was 10 years old. I had started puberty.
What? Oh, God.
And I was crying about saying the S word.
Okay, yeah. No, that's that is rejection-sensitive dysphoria. Do you know where the word dysphoria comes from?
Latin, Greek?
Yeah, those would be the two that everything basically comes from, yes.
Wow, was that a rejection, Corey?
right?
No, that was a very, very extreme failure on your part, Noah.
Oh, I'm going to sulk.
And rejection-sensitive dysphoria in action. No, dysphoria comes from the ancient Greek, so you are correct, Noah, but you throw enough shit at a wall, yeah, I suppose you would be correct. It comes from the Greek, dysphoros, which means hard to bear.
I know that one.
Yeah, so essentially just feeling really, really intensely bad is what you want to take from that. And there were a few different sort of behaviors or sort of signs of people that are experiencing rejection-sensitive dysphoria. So I'll just rattle these off. Feeling embarrassed or self-conscious, or specifically it being really easy to feel embarrassed or self-conscious. Low self-esteem, difficulty sort of controlling or containing emotions after a perceived rejection. And again, I'm saying perceived rejection because you don't even need to have been rejected or been told that you're a failure. You just need to feel like someone is giving you those signals, right? Instead of sort of losing control outwardly, you could also turn your feelings inward. So being really, really depressed, or, you know, crying like a little baby. Or
Corey.
Not making fun of Noah.
No. Why?
I don't know. It's easy. It's low hanging fruit. I'm
it's
sorry.
Quite funny, yeah.
Exactly. He likes it. Tell him you like it.
He's kicking me. I like it.
And this sort of specifically, it's highlighted in my notes that this could be mistaken for bipolar disorder or other sort of personality disorders like BPD that are sort of associated with sort of mood swings. You could be a people pleaser just in an effort to avoid sort of that negative feeling.
That'd be crazy.
Wow. Well, yeah. What's that like?
That'd be so wild. That'd be silly.
Seems like real pain. I don't know what that's like. Whatever the opposite of a people pleaser is, that's what I am.
I'm a people displeaser.
I feel like a people pleaser is more of a psychopath than people pleasers are manipulative, Luke. They manipulate people into no, genuinely. I think people pleasing is a manipulative sort of thing. Like not in a sort of you're a horrible person sort of way, but you're genuinely trying to manipulate people's feelings towards you by, putting yourself into
being
situations.
Nice to them.
Yeah, but it's not just being nice. It's being nice to the detriment of yourself, right? There's a whole thing there about people. We could do an entire episode on people-pleasing, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah, we should.
Yeah, because I've seen a few people talking about the sort of manipulative aspect of it, because there's this sort of internal feeling of maybe resentment because, you know, you're doing things that you don't want to do just to make people happy. And not even necessarily make people happy, but, in your head, do things that you think will make people happy. Do you know what I mean? It's not just a case of, I'm going to do this nice thing for you. It's a case of like, oh man, I'm so terrified of you disliking me that I'm going to do what I think is the thing that you want me to do. Whereas, you know, someone that you're doing this for might actually want you to just do whatever it is that you want to do and not, you know, overexert yourself to try and keep them happy.
Yeah, I don't know that what you described there on its own is manipulative, but I think that it could then, if you sort of build up a sort of mental amount of debt that the other person owes you for you like going out of your way to do nice things for them that they didn't ask for.
No, quite literally it's emotional manipulation. We covered it in our emotional manipulation episode. You were there, remember?
Well, I probably was, yeah.
No, I mean,
were they there mentally? Who knows?
No, it genuinely is manipulation in the basest sense, in terms of like you're trying to make someone feel a certain way almost without their sort of consent. It genuinely does fall under manipulation. I know that it seems like but they're doing a positive thing. Go and watch the manipulation episode and you'll see why it might not actually be a terribly positive thing.
And now Nora and Luke are both feeling rejection sensitive dysphoria.
Be less wrong. To finish off that list, you can avoid doing things, you know, starting tasks and whatnot, because you're so terrified of failing and doing them wrong and just and messing up, you know. So almost being a sort of perfectionist to an unhealthy degree. And then, yeah, I mean, the last thing on the list there is quite literally perfectionism. And so, you know, that could manifest as an intense anxiety as well, not making time for self-care, not giving oneself any downtime, constantly just doing far too much work and making themselves feel bad, Luke and Noah.
I feel good when I get work done. I like succeeding.
You both have a sickness.
Wow, this is it's just an episode about me and Noah. That's so funny.
There's hidden cameras everywhere.
No, those cameras aren't hidden. They're right there.
They're right out in the open. Hello.
I love the idea that Noah's so unobservant. He's like, ah, hidden camera. I have a quote here for you from Dysregulated Not Deficit, a qualitative study on symptomology of ADHD in young adults. This was published in 2023, and I would recommend it. It's a good old read. This quote says, "It's literal pain for me. I literally feel it in my chest, and it hurts. I'll sit and think about it for an extremely long time and nitpick and replay it over and over again to the point where people are like, a lot of time has gone by. It's not that big a deal. Let it go. And I'm still sitting there pondering everything I could have done." Feeling.
I get it in my belly.
You know, your belly.
Yeah.
Get it in my belly.
I just obsess. I just can't let it go. Mm-hmm. Moving on. There we go. Just let it go and moved on. That's it's that easy. There we go.
Corey watched Frozen for the first time last night.
Anyway, so it's linked to ADHD, like Noah said, and it could be because of differences in brain structure, but we don't really know exactly why. It's another one of the I don't know episodes, or we don't know episodes. Scientists don't know very much about this, and apparently those differences in sort of brain structure and whatnot could result in a difficulty regulating those rejection emotions, or just emotions in general, really. We don't know how common it is in general, but it, as I said, seems to be linked to ADHD. And if you look this up, you're mostly going to be seeing things to do with ADHD. It could be linked to other personality and mood disorders as well, but we don't have enough research on it. We don't know how common it is. We don't know who it affects. We don't know very much. What we do know is that some little boys get very, very excitable and energetic. ADHD. The rest of it?
And everyone else.
Everyone else?
Yes, not just little boys.
Are you kidding me? Not just little boys? I, an adult man with ADHD, have ADHD. Big, it's not just little boys?
Big girls, too.
Big girls.
Big girls.
Not little girls.
Love that Mika song. No.
Like Peach from SpongeBob. She's a whale.
Wow.
No, whale. Wow.
Another quote from Dysregulated Not Deficit. And again, this is a qualitative study, which means essentially it's not necessarily looking at hard sort of data and numbers. It's asking people a bunch of questions and sort of drawing conclusions from that. Still perfectly valid form of study. It's just not the sort of one you'd usually consider when you're sort of thinking of scientific studies. Mm. Probably, unless, you know, you do sociology, in which case you'd maybe be more inclined to think of that sort of thing. I'm going to do the quote now. In response to feeling rejected, many participants retreated from the person by whom they felt rejected and avoided social situations if they feared that they might be excluded. Some participants had developed coping mechanisms for handling their dysphoria, such as reminding themselves not to take things personally in the moment. Learning the term RSD itself was also helpful in understanding the phenomenon and being able to mitigate its effects by making participants cognizant of related tendencies.
Don't be upset, really. Just remind yourself that you're a pussy and just don't be upset.
Just toughen up. Just stop feeling bad.
Don't think it works like that.
Is it not?
No.
Isn't that, I thought that worked for all dysphoria. Just stop.
No,
just stop feeling
well,
it.
I did, yeah. The binding helped, but I just thought maybe I should just get over it.
And you did. You got over it, but no interventions whatsoever.
Yeah, because completely, it's just all this self-affirmation. You are valid. And I felt valid.
A ding-a-ling-a-ling. Is that the ad bell?
The ad bell sounds different today. I'm not sure what's up.
Because it's telling
telling us about a different show. It's not telling us about SciGuys, it's telling us about After Dark. After Dark is the show that happens after SciGuys has ended. Do you know anything about it, Luke?
After Dark is a separate show to SciGuys. But you know in SciGuys where we have a conversation, we kind of veer off topic and we kind of need to bring it back on topic because we're doing a topic, but those conversations are also really good in and of themselves. It's a whole show of just that.
You mean it's a whole show of just the good fun bits of SciGuys without any of the dirty, boring science?
That's exactly what I'm saying. I hate science.
If you're like Luke and you hate science but love listening to Luke talk, you can go ahead to our Patreon and sign up to After Dark.
I think I feel like I've understood what you were saying earlier about people pleasing. Is it that what you're saying is that you are sort of changing your behavior to try and elicit a specific response out of somebody? And so because you're trying to elicit that specific response, you are necessarily sort of, and they don't know that you're trying to elicit that specific response, you are manipulating what response they give you and how they think about you. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And there's also the sort of, I mean, really true people pleasing is not just doing things that you want to do out of the kindness of your heart because you want to make people sort of, you know, like happier. It is often motivated by a fear of sort of rejection, people being having negative feelings. And so you'll go out of your way to do things that you don't necessarily want to do. You're just trying to avoid that negative feeling. Do you know what I mean? Rather than doing something positive because you want to do something positive, you're doing something positive to avoid something negative, right? Yeah. And so to an extent, there's almost a level of dishonesty with yourself and with others potentially as well. I mean, again, whole episode on this.
Sure, yeah.
But you're so right in what you're saying there. But if you don't mind, I think I might move on to emotional dysregulation.
Mm-hmm.
So emotional dysregulation, it's a sort of mental health thingy, a symptom, if you want to call it that. You can probably guess what emotional dysregulation is. Anyone want to have a stab at it?
There's not enough science in this podcast. It's a mental health thingy.
Are you every single comment ever received?
Yeah, yes.
No. Come on, do you want to take a stab at what emotional dysregulation is?
I'm just going to say you have trouble regulating your emotions.
Yeah.
You have trouble controlling the level of emotion you feel and perhaps your response to that emotion.
Yeah, pretty spot on. I mean, it kind of explains itself, doesn't it? There was an easy win there, wasn't it? Yeah, no, basically your brain has got a lot of connections in it. Well, most people's brains have a lot of connections. Noah? Brains have got a lot of connections. Sorry. The look you gave me.
You make fun of Luke next.
He does. He does when you're not here. It's quite nice to have a break.
The brain has lots of connections, even yours, Noah. Yes.
Stop!
That was me being nice!
No!
That wasn't you being nice. Even yours, Noah, yes.
Because I just said that it didn't.
Oh, okay.
No, don't, no.
Okay, fine.
Don't accept that.
The brain has a lot of connections, so, you know, there's, you gotta sort
even
of...
Even mine?
Further study is needed.
So the brain has a lot of connections, and you've got to kind of figure out how those connections work together, right? And as you're growing up, as you age, your brain kind of gets better at regulating all of the signals from all of these connections, or it should get better at regulating the signals from all these connections. If you've got emotional dysregulation, you're not very good at sort of regulating those. I say you're not very good.
But if you have emotional dysregulation, you're not very good.
It's a personal failure of yours to... No, I'm joking. But, no, your brain is just less equipped to sort of deal with managing all of those different sort of interactions and signals and whatnot. And, you know, you could get to really, really unmanageable levels of signals. So it could like kind of overload, kind of like the volume of a TV being turned up way too loud or just too much water rushing through a dam. Or another analogy that sort of illustrates my point.
When lava is really hot and it's too hot.
That's just lava, I guess.
Sorry, I'm not actually stupid. I just like to make jokes.
Can I just say one thing? The one thing that bugs me about lava in movies is that it's...
Tasty.
Is that it does look tasty. But no, whenever it's in a movie, people always treat it as though it's just like... Ooh, ouchie, too hot. Like, if you can maybe touch it a little bit and you get burnt, but it's fine. No, you cannot touch lava. You would literally explode before touching it.
But the first Shrek movie doesn't do that.
Yeah,
The first Shrek movie is very true to life with lava.
Yes, I suppose it is, with the dragons and
Shrek
whatnot.
Shrek is not realistic. Have you seen the prince's hair? It's so wonderful. This is not possible.
he's talking about Shrek
1.
Oh. No, not Shrek 2. Okay? Totally different thing.
Donkey's voice is so beautiful. You think that's real?
Yeah, it's Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy.
Lovely voice.
I don't know.
You don't believe it.
I don't know. I think there's something going on.
This is your... Everyone has a conspiracy theory, and this is your conspiracy theory.
I was more making a joke about the fact that ogres aren't real. Eddie Murphy has... Never mind.
So emotional dysregulation, it's not unique to ADHD. You can have emotional dysregulation with many other disorders. In fact, yeah, it's kind of like a diarrhea situation, right? Lots of things can cause diarrhea. Lots of things can cause emotional dysregulation, or emotional dysregulation can be related to a lot of different things, you know, mood disorders and whatnot. ADHD is linked to ADHD. So I've got a quote from a 2014 paper here, which I'm not going to read out, actually. I've just changed my mind, but I will tell you the gist of it. Would you like to hear the gist?
Please.
So the gist of it is essentially in 2014, this paper was saying, hey, emotional dysregulation, it seems to be, you know, pretty tied to ADHD. In fact, you know, it could be a core part of ADHD. Maybe. Who knows?
One of like the Ten Commandments.
Yes, the Ten Commandments of ADHD. Mm-hmm. Thou shalt not pay attention.
Be really sexy. Two, endearing.
Please, more.
Three, yep. Run really fast. Four, be really agile. Five, have really nice hair. Uh-huh. Six.
I feel like these are kind of redundant.
I feel this is just you describing how you view yourself.
It's really not.
You describe yourself as slippery all the time.
No, he does describe himself as agile. No one's caught me yet.
I have caught you several times.
It makes it feel good, you know. It's like, oh yeah, you can't catch the slippery snake.
Finish your 10.
Six, really bouncy, like really just general spring, just really just like a just general spring, like Tigger. Uh-huh. Seven. Need sound cancelling headphones, things too loud.
Okay.
Mm. Eight, not be able to get out of bed when really want to. Nine, take 4-hour baths. 10, annoy everyone around you.
Okay, you forgot emotional dysregulation.
That's like quite literally.
That's number one, right?
No.
You found the hidden commandment.
Well, the 11th one. Congratulations, Corey. Well, the time for the DSM-6.
Thank you, Noah. Well done.
That's okay.
Okay. So, moving on, a 2023 paper then kind of talks about, I say a 2023 paper, someone I've been quoting this whole time, dysregulated, not deficit. It's bloody brilliant. I'd give it a read if I were you. And I am me, and I did read it. It's great. So, it goes on to kind of talk about how emotional dysregulation was an associated feature in the DSM-3, or that it was changed from a formal criterion of ADHD to an associated feature in the DSM-3. And basically, yeah, at this point, emotional dysregulation and ADHD, they go hand in hand. Young adults with ADHD have been reported to be twice as likely to experience emotional dysregulation, and emotional dysregulation has been linked to lower quality of life independent of traditional ADHD symptomology. It could also be particularly relevant to females with ADHD, apparently.
Oh god. So when I had periods, emotional regulation.
No, that wasn't your strong suit, no.
No. It made it so much worse.
Yeah.
But, oh, that's interesting. Hormones must have such an impact on ADHD symptoms.
They must do, yeah. Actually, yeah. I mean, especially the emotional regulation part. Yeah. Because hormones can really influence how you feel. But that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about
Rejection sensitive for you.
Rejection sensitive dysphoria. Rejection sensitivity. Do you know the difference between those two? Rejection sensitivity and rejection sensitive dysphoria. Just because there's not a huge amount of papers talking about rejection sensitive dysphoria specifically, but there are a whole lot more talking about just rejection sensitivity.
Rejection sensitivity, is that just when you're sensitive to it? Rejection sensitivity dysphoria is where you're so sensitive to it that it like ruins your life. It's like the extent that you feel it, right?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily the extent. It's more about the dysphoria aspect of it. But I mean, yes, kind of, but I don't want to sort of devalue rejection sensitivity because that is kind of a thing in and of itself.
So the dysphoria is the feeling, right? It's the experience. So like sensitivity is like, oh, I think I just got rejected, but I don't care about it. Like, so you're upset, you're sensitive. You always think you're being rejected, even if you're not, but you're not necessarily bothered about it. And then the dysphoria is like when you go, oh, I feel that thing I feel.
Ye- How about I just explain what it is, and then we'll circle back.
You asked, we're going to guess.
Yeah. I stopped listening halfway through your explanation because I got distracted by a light to my left.
Oh.
Yes. Wow. So
you're going to look real silly if I'm right.
You probably are right. I just, as I said, I got distracted by a light to my left and I stopped listening. I don't know what happened. So, they're not exactly the same thing. Reaction sensitivity can be found in other sort of mood disorders or personality disorders, like BPD, for example. And what you...
No.
Go on.
BPD is like big pussy disorder.
What the fuck?
Not as in like you're so that's pussy, why I didn't
pussy
say it.
Too
just,
big.
Pussy's really big.
Such a large vagina, it's a disorder.
Yeah, that's why I said no, I wasn't going to say it.
You said it.
I think that's the ADHD coming out there. No, that's the
big pussy.
Impulse control.
Big pussy, sorry.
So, people with rejection sensitivity can have some of the following sort of signs or symptoms or whatever it is you want to call it. Severe anxiety or other negative emotions before anticipated rejection. Trouble seeing non-positive interactions as anything but rejection and reacting, you know, as though they were negative. So even if they're neutral or just sort of undefined interactions, just seeing this is a negative one, oh my gosh, and then reacting as though it were negative. And overreactions to feeling of rejection. And then that can lead to behavior that reflects negative emotions like anger, rage, extreme sadness, severe anxiety, etc. Now, that seems really similar to rejection sensitive dysphoria. But as Luke was saying, it is specifically about the feeling of dysphoria, that sort of like overwhelming, I hate myself and I hate everything and I'm going to be a people pleaser or I'm going to cry or become severely depressed or think about every single interaction every second after it's happened because I just can't stop. Oh my God, please make it stop. I can't get to sleep. I can't sleep. I can't sleep. Oh my God.
I feel like that's also what I said.
Yeah. I wasn't. Sweetheart, look, I'm going to be honest, guys. There was something to my left, and I got super distracted. I don't know.
It sounds like what you're saying there in part is that rejection sensitivity can have multiple different like follow-on effects. So, like, it could make you angry at the rejection, or it could make you anxious at the rejection, or like there's multiple things that you could do with that perceived rejection.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the dysphoria version is like you just feel the dysphoria. Where do you know what I mean?
No. So think of the dysphoria as being an add-on to the rejection sensitivity. People with ADHD with RSD can absolutely have all of those other reactions to rejection, okay. Sort of perceived rejection. It's just the difference being that there is this overwhelming sort of a negative feeling, this sort of like emotional pain, like. Feeling it like it's physical pain, you know, emotionally speaking. That doesn't make any sense, but we'll move on.
No.
You know, sort of that is a sort of add-on to the rejection sensitivity.
Okay, so it's a subgroup. Rather than being two separate things, the rejection sensitivity dysphoria is like a sub category of rejection sensitivity.
Yeah, you can absolutely think of it as a subcategory. Yeah. It's a very sort of specific thing. You know, you can have all of these other things, and then it's dysphoria if you have the dysphoria. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's the difference between rejection sensitivity and rejection sensitive dysphoria. As I said, it's just that sort of add-on feeling of dysphoria, right?
Yes.
Makes sense. Very, very straightforward. Shall we talk about the causes of RSD?
Beep, 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 beep.
Yes.
I have a theory.
Oh, go on then, Dr. Finns. But do tell us your theory.
Is it that due to the behaviors displayed by people with ADHD, they are often told to calm down or to be this or to be that, and then therefore they have been traumatized into having this response? They have had so many experiences where they're like, you've done a bad, you've not sat still when you need to sit still, therefore now you are scared that you're doing everything wrong the whole time.
Experts have very little idea why RSD actually happens, so yeah, sure, maybe. Sci Guys says yeah. Yeah, that's our 2 cents on it. Noah's theory is 100% correct. That's what we've decided.
Thank you.
Although I should say that it's not borne out in the data. We don't have any data to fully support that. But I think we as the Sci Guys can just say yeah.
To be fair, neither did Freud. So. So. Just saying.
I think he was a sillier man than I.
Probably more focused on penises, but
I think it's about 50-50.
Yeah, I don't know about that part.
No, I think he was way more obsessed with dicks, and that's saying something.
First time I ever met you, Luke, was at a pre-sitsy meetup. You're like, oh, you're the guy who tweets about dicks all the time. was my first interaction with you ever.
I remember saying that to someone, but I never knew that was you.
It was me.
In Luke's defense, you did tweet about dicks like
I just saw a testosterone. I don't know what to tell you.
So yeah, no, we don't actually know exactly why it happens, but it could be due to sort of brain structure things. So social rejection can feel very similar to pain. Your brain processes it in a similar way. There's similar brain activity to sort of, you know, responding to pain as social rejection. And because people with ADHD have difficulty regulating emotions, and, you know, we've spoken about emotional dysregulation, because of that, it could result in this sort of extreme reaction. And yeah, what Noah's saying has been sort of brought up in the literature in, can you guess what paper I'm going to reference? Dysregulated, not deficit.
Aha.
You didn't even let us guess.
I didn't think you were going to be able to remember the name. So
I was just getting ready. Luke was getting ready.
I was getting ready to not remember the name.
Yeah, you were going to remember the name.
I was.
Were you?
Yeah.
Do you want me to? Okay. Well. Beep beep. We're going back. So do you guys know what paper I'm about to say?
Dysregulated, not disorder.
Okay. Jesus Christ. Dysregulated, not deficit. So I literally just said it.
I think leave that whole bit in. That was great.
No, that was the plan. I had just said it. So, dysregulated, not deficit. They actually have, as I said, it's qualitative. They've spoken to a bunch of people with ADHD and they sort of asked them their thoughts and feelings on these sorts of things, including rejection-sensitive dysphoria. And yeah, someone has said, and I'll read this quote out for you. I feel like it happens not necessarily as a symptom, but as a learned sort of thing. I had a lot of failed relationships and friendships throughout elementary school, and I never really knew why I didn't fit in with a lot of people where we all have these things in common. Why don't they like me? And I always felt separated and distant from any friendships, and people would kind of become distant and leave for no reason, and there was no explanation. So at that point, the only common denominator, so then any time that I get any hint of that happening, I freak out and I'm like, I'm going to be abandoned again. I'm going to be left alone again. Yeah, so that's a quote from Dysregulated, not Deficit.
What if they were just really annoying? Well, it wasn't the ADHD. It was just they're just really irritating.
Oh right, no, there's no disorder. You're just really annoying.
People just don't like you. Like, I don't know what to tell you. You're just an annoying guy. Like,
I mean, that's
why you're blaming it on your mental. You know,
you're sounding like my GP.
That's kind of sad.
Well, I was like, I always wondered whether I might be autistic, and my GP was like, maybe you're just a rude person who wants an autism diagnosis so you can get away with it.
Yeah, maybe you're just an asshole.
Maybe you're just suck. Maybe you're just fundamentally unlikable.
Yeah, we've run the tests, and medically, you suck.
So it says here you're a little bitch.
imagine you go in for anxiety, and they're like, we've run all the tests, and yeah, just a little bitch.
No. They're just like, you've got a lot to worry about. Yeah, we checked. Nah, there's a storm coming, buddy. That, what you were saying there about people who like experience it in friendships and stuff, my theory, when Noah did his theory, my theory was like possibly that because there are traits about somebody with ADHD where like people who are neurotypical genuinely might reject you for how you
being
are.
Being annoying, yeah.
When you feel like you're being rejected, you know, there's that whole movement of saying you don't have ADHD, you are ADHD. Like, it's part of who you are. It's not like a bolt-on thing that you can cure. It's who you are, and you have to sort of learn to live with who you are and love who you are, right? And the idea is like, if somebody's rejecting you because of a thing that you did because of your ADHD, then they fundamentally are rejecting you in your entirety,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
because it's born out of who you are. So that's sort of my theory, which I think is sort of a similar sort of thing to what you're saying.
I would just like to add, so one, I was born out of my mother, but two, to add to what you're saying, yeah, no, I totally agree. I think it's kind of a mix, personally, my theory, since we're all giving our theories, I'd say it's probably a mix of, you know, sort of these experiences compounding to a sort of almost trauma response, like Noah was saying, but also that emotional dysregulation, you know, meaning that you're more inclined to have sort of big reactions to perceived feelings of rejection. And then also, Luke, what you're saying about sort of, you know, actually being rejected for who you genuinely are with ADHD. I think they all sort of come together in this sort of nebulous experience of, I've gone through my life being annoying as hell because I have ADHD. That is genuinely my experience. I remember being a kid and being like, I'm going to not be annoying today. I'm not going to do it.
Well, I still think that.
God, I could, like, I was like, I'm going to not say a word. Could never do it. Could hey, never.
You guys sometimes decide to not be annoying?
I try.
It's never worked in my life. I've never been not annoying. But no, I remember being a kid and being like, oh, I'm really annoying. I want to not be annoying so that people aren't annoyed by me. Mm. And never thought there was a problem with that. But anyway, so, you know, that sort of whole experience of being really bloody annoying because you've got ADHD or you are ADHD.
That's actually really manipulative of you, Corey.
Oh, shut up, Luke. I do want to say, to add on to what I'm adding on to, that I really wish there was a word for people with ADHD, because you've got autistic people. Like, you could say someone is autistic, but you can't, there's no adjective form of ADHD. ADHD exists solely as a noun, and it's a noun to describe the disorder. There is no noun to describe people with ADHD. There's no adjective to describe people with ADHD.
ADHD is just doesn't quite.
No, I hate it. Exactly. And it doesn't, it never comes off right. And I find that sort of lack in our language to be really apparent when you're talking about people with ADHD, you're talking about people who are autistic, right? And I do that a lot. I chat shit about those groups all the time. And when I do that, I realize there's a real difference in the way that you're able to talk about autistic people compared to people with ADHD. Like, that's sort of lexical gap there.
What if we just came up with one, like the Coolios, like the Slayers, like, ooh.
Why does it have to be a positive, cool thing? Why can't it, like, autism is like a fairly neutral term. It's not like the flippin' legends.
Flippin' legends.
Okay, right, in the comments, come up with a term for people with ADHD that isn't just annoying. That lexical gap, I find, really does limit the way that you're able to talk and therefore think about ADHD and people with ADHD. Do you know what I mean? Like, as you're saying, Luke, it is not sort of just a disorder that is added on. It is fundamentally who you are. And we're able to sort of discuss that in an easy way when it comes to autism. Mm. But when it comes to ADHD, it is so much harder. And yeah, I do genuinely think that a sort of word to describe people with ADHD would make that so much easier. But back to sort of how RSD kind of develops, my theory on it, as I said, is kind of an amalgam of all of these sorts of things, where you've got emotional dysregulation that causes more extreme reactions to perceived rejection. And you're really, really like looking for rejection, and not necessarily consciously, but you're constantly, looking for rejection because of that sort of trauma that you've had in your past, potentially. And I'm using trauma very loosely here, but trauma in your past, potentially, where you've been rejected because you're annoying as hell because you have ADHD.
It also feels like the kind of thing that might, like how deja vu, the theory of how deja vu works is like that one signal reaches a part of the brain quicker than another signal reaches the part of the brain. And it gives this really specific, like, phenomenological experience of deja vu. It feels like almost maybe like one part of your brain.
It's like how one part of your brain, like a signal reaches like one part of your brain, like faster than a signal reaches another part of your brain. And it creates this really specific phenomenological experience.
Oh, stop it. That's really weird. I didn't like that. As in like some part of your brain decides I've been rejected. Mm-hmm. And then before another part of your brain, maybe with more context, maybe like the prefrontal cortex, for example, can sort of send the signal to, for example, your fight or flight response or whatever part of you is involved with creating the feeling of dysphoria, that's already been triggered and it's too late. So like the more conscious areas of your brain that have a load of context can go, oh, that might not be rejection, but you've already been triggered. It's already too late. Yeah. And that signal that says, no, don't worry, that sort of attenuating signal, it can't do its job.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that could definitely be the case. Again, I don't want to say anything sort of explicit or, sort of grand or sweeping statements, ADHD. Sorry, I didn't want to be explicit.
What if maybe the solution is giving people with ADHD brain slower downers instead of stimulants?
Well, so then
they don't have time to react.
Yeah, fill their brains with treacle.
Sludge.
Right, so interestingly, sorry, I just need to... Those were such different suggestions.
Is your brain full of treacle?
Mine's full of sludge.
Being with you two makes it feel like it's full of both treacle and sludge. Luke's a treacle, Noah's the sludge. No. Interestingly, though, stimulants actually, there is some evidence that they do help with emotional regulation in ADHD. I've seen a couple papers that were saying that, which is almost sort of, I mean, counterintuitive, right? Mm. That you give someone an upper, someone who is already hyperactive, and it makes them a more chilled, just down-to-earth, cool dude.
Mm. Same with caffeine sometimes as well with ADHD, I think.
See, caffeine makes me anxious, personally. But, like, Ritalin, oh boy, if I get some Ritalin, I'm actually quite normal. It feels great. I will tweet a lot if I... Here's the thing, okay? So for anyone that wants to understand me and my personal experiences, before I realized that the Ritalin I had lactase, and that I'm now lactose intolerant because I've been vegan for so long, I'd have what I called the Rit shits, which would mean that about an hour after having my Ritalin, I'd be sat on the toilet for 30 minutes to an hour. A very normal thing, right? Now, during that period... The Ritalin was hitting. And so what would happen is I would just tweet long threads. If you've seen any
whilst
long
on the
threads.
Toilet.
Yeah. Oh, seen God. Any long threads from me around about 11 a.m. That's what those were.
He's having a long Rit shit.
Yeah. And I'm focused tweeting. On something. I'm focused on writing a long Twitter thread. But no, genuinely. Stimulants can help with that sort of emotional dysregulation in ADHD, which could be sort of counterintuitive to some folk, but no, it actually does help. This sort of dysphoria that we're talking about. So we've kind of talked about how the sort of rejection sensitivity could come about. But that dysphoria, that intense emotional pain, because you've got this sort of emotional dysregulation and because potentially you've got this history of people sort of rejecting you or feeling like a failure or whatnot and not really having necessarily an explanation as to why, you could become hypersensitive to that sort of perceived rejection, right? So you could pick up signals where they're not there, and you could pick up, you could take a sort of neutral situation and it could feel like, oh, this is actually really bad. That sort of dysphoria could come about essentially because you then feel social rejection and it feels physically painful because, you know, social rejection, as we've already said, can feel similar, can be processed similar to actual physical pain. Mm. And because of your emotional dysregulation, instead of your brain being like, let's just turn this down a notch, it's like, turn it up to 11, bitch!
And it's now anticipating it before it comes as well, like, because it doesn't want to feel quite so much pain.
Exactly, yeah, no, absolutely. So all of these things could kind of compound into this feeling of rejection-sensitive dysphoria. And again, I really wish that I could sort of, you know, give you a more sort of scientific explanation of all of this. To be totally clear, everything we've said about the causes is, I mean, to be honest, at best, probably speculation from us, from sort of personal experience or secondhand experience or whatnot, mixed in with a little bit of scientific knowledge there based on sort of emotional dysregulation, because we've just not studied this. We've just not studied it nearly enough. And I think that's kind of a real problem when it comes to ADHD, that we have so many words and so many phrases and so many different sort of experiences that people with ADHD have come together in different communities, primarily online, really, and on TikTok as well. But these things aren't really recognized scientifically because the studies and whatnot that are done on ADHD seem to be done on sort of the wrong topics, right? You look at sort of kids with ADHD, or sometimes you look at adults with ADHD with emotional problems or how treatment affects them and blah, blah, blah. But there needs to be, in my sort of opinion, there needs to be more research like this paper that I've been quoting a ton. Does anyone want to have a crack at the name?
Dysregulated, not
deficit.
Deficit.
Well done. Good job,
teamwork.
Both of you.
This is what I was saying. Yeah. Together.
But yeah, no, this one is a sort of qualitative study looking at people's experiences with ADHD. And I feel like that's something that's really lacking in the research, people's experiences, right? We talk about ADHD as being attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And I think you can ask most people with ADHD how they feel that sort of term describes their life, their condition, their, you know, just experience, right? And they'd probably say, it doesn't really encapsulate it quite that well. And there are so many different things that, as I've said, we've sort of come together in different communities, primarily online, and sort of we've found all of these sort of different, you could say, symptoms or related conditions or experiences, blah, 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 that the literature is just lacking on, right? Like, I'm really struggling to find studies that talk about rejection sensitive dysphoria, right? Because they're just not really there yet. I think we need more sort of studies on ADHD I think, from people with ADHD in the same sense, you know, we've talked about in episodes on sort of trans and LGBT topics in general, that we really should have people who fall into these categories researching these things, because that unique personal experience can give a perhaps different and in some cases maybe better view of the topic, or at the very least they can ask different questions that people without that experience might not think to ask. Yes, science is supposed to be this sort of in some ways impersonal pursuit where you remove your own personal biases, but you need to ask questions and you need to, you know, figure out what questions to ask, and that necessarily has to come from who you are as a person. You're not going to be able to ask questions that are entirely out with your own experience. And so almost counterintuitively, despite science being a sort of impersonal, non-unbiased thing and whatnot, you do need people from a wealth of backgrounds to really get in and answer all of those questions in an unbiased way, because everyone's going to have a bias, right? Even if you sort of describe bias as just being the sort of thing that's going to guide what questions you are able to sort of conceptualize, right? Everyone's going to have a slightly different set of questions that they're going to think to ask. And only by having a diverse group of people can we ask as many questions as possible and get the best picture possible. And right now with ADHD, it seems to be far too focused on it as a sort of disorder amongst children rather than just a way that some people, like what, 5-ish% of people maybe? I can't remember off the top of my head. Some percentage of people just are.
Yeah, I suppose one of the big problems as well is, like, if you imagine how much ADHD can have the potential to hold you back, especially in like in a neurotypical world, the trouble is like, if you're trying to do scientific studies and stuff, not only can the people who like are at the top, because they probably weren't held back in the ways that somebody with ADHD might have been held back, not necessarily understand the importance of the research that you're trying to get funding for, or like at least justify your time spending time on, they won't even be able to understand things like what dysphoria feels like necessarily if they've never experienced it. So they wouldn't see the value necessarily in exploring it. And it doesn't have the same sort of, you know, everyone can potentially get cancer. Right. And so
not me.
Well, OK, everyone other than Corey can potentially get cancer. And so in that sort of funding model, even if the number of people who got cancer is the same as the number of people who have ADHD, it's definitely not. But even if they were the same, because it affects everybody, the average person's more likely to be like, yeah, we should study that. Whereas if your like system of promotion and getting to the top of any kind of organization is fundamentally a little bit harsher on people who have ADHD, because they will find it harder to progress in that because of the various things that come with having ADHD. And then the things that you want to study aren't going to affect the majority of the people who are in positions to give you money to do those studies, then you're going to end up with no research on this stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, from personal experience, you know, university was really tough for me. And I say really tough. I mean, tough in the sense that I went from school where there was just rigid sort of, you know, timetabling and scheduling. And short of like not going to school, it was really hard to like, you know, not do well, because the content was relatively, you know, straightforward and easy for me. That was just a lucky thing on my part, right? Which meant that ADHD for me just kind of went undiagnosed. It flew under the radar because I was doing well. And, you know, generally this perception of ADHD is you're disruptive and you don't do well in school and blah, blah, blah. But if you're, you know, able to perform well, fly under the radar, right? School was straightforward. School was basically easy for me, right? And that sort of inherent scheduling and structure to school made it potentially like a little bit easier. Yes, it was horrible having to wake up every morning. I would forget to do homework or leave it to the last minute or whatever, right? But you could get by in school whilst, like, you know, doing all of that terribly, so long as you did your exams well. And I did exams well, not because I studied, but because I, like, again, school was, the content was pretty straightforward for me, so I didn't need to study. I get to uni and suddenly, oh, I now need to plan an essay for it to be a good essay. I need to, like, you know, like plan this and structure it in order to research it properly. Oh God, these deadlines that are happening, like they actually matter. This sort of work that you've got to do by yourself. Oh, you need to get to, you need to get to lectures and blah, 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 and this and that. All of that sort of stuff, that was too much for me. right? Not the content, not the learning in and of itself, the sort of personal regulation that goes with it. And so while uni, like in terms of content, like really interesting, really like understandable and whatnot, right? The living as a person aspect, near enough impossible, right? And that's just one way that someone with ADHD, specifically undiagnosed ADHD as well, right? Like I was running, this was pre-Ritalin Corey, okay? This was a guy who like, oh, for like 3 days, I'm not doing nothing. Have I showered? I don't know. Who cares? Whatever. I don't know what's happening. Or like, do you know what? Someone wants to go out tonight and because I'm in uni? Yeah, absolutely. I can't see any consequences to this. 7 hours later, oh, the consequences of this. Damn, right? Like, all of those sorts of things can hold someone with ADHD back, especially, as I said, undiagnosed, because you're not even able to see what the cause of the problem is. It's just, oh, this is a personal failing of mine. I just need to be better. I'll need to think more about this. Oh, wait, why can't I think more about this? Oh, because it's just not how my brain works, right? All of those sorts of things can hold someone back in school, in uni, and even like, you know, after uni, if you're doing like sort of even like sort of, let's say, post-grad stuff or in sort of the professional world. There are so many hurdles, as you're saying, Luke, that could stop someone from getting there. And like for me personally, I genuinely experienced that. That's why I'm doing a science podcast. I'm not a scientist, probably. Also, because if I were a scientist, I'd probably have to have like an actual job. Those don't sit very well with me. Going somewhere at the same time every day? No, thank you.
I would love that.
You have ADHD. That's the autism talking, buddy. No, but I mean, that's kind of rejection-sensitive dysphoria. And I guess a kind of little overview on the sort of lack we have in ADHD research. Is there anything else anyone wants to add to any of that before we finish up?
I also feel like that about school. I didn't study at all, didn't revise, got told off for not revising, and then did fine in exams.
Mm.
But yeah, I don't think I would have been able to go to university. I still can't. I'm like every day, I'll wake up, I'll make breakfast, and then I'll start work, and then I just don't.
Yeah.
So I don't know how I would do it at uni.
No, absolutely. It's really rough. It's really tough. And as well, to bring it back to sort of RSD, that feeling of failure can just make things worse, right? Like the sort of depression aspect of it, right? Let's say you fail one thing, or you've gone from doing really well, like let's say A's, straight A's, or A's and B's, or whatever it is really, you know, is performing really well for you, right? And then this sudden sort of drop down, oh, that's a failure. Oh, wow, I feel really bad. Boom, depression. And Luke, can you remind me, does depression make doing things easier or harder?
Oh, way easier.
Really?
Yeah, you just fly through all the things you got to do. You get out of the house on time. You're out of bed 5 minutes before your alarm goes off.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hang on.
Wait, depression.
Oh, I thought you meant pression.
Yeah.
Depression. Yeah, no, opposite of everything I just said.
Yeah, it makes things harder, right? And so you could see how rejection-sensitive dysphoria can compound with, you know, ADHD symptoms and create a unique experience there wherein, okay, yeah, things are a little bit harder because you've got ADHD, but that feeling of, oh no, I've messed up, is so intense that it makes things even harder because now you're depressed, right? And it's just interesting because, yeah, these are experiences that aren't being studied properly, that do give better insight into the effects of ADHD on someone's well-being, you know, your sort of mental health and whatnot. And we just don't really know enough about it. So there you go, rejection-sensitive dysphoria, stun.
Ouch.
What happened?
Ouch.
What do you do?
My feelings.
Oh,
feelings.
I see.
Well, there's just one thing left to do before we start to wrap up this episode. It's a quick fire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. Rejection sensitive dysphoria edition.
Yes. Well, the rules for the quick fire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question between the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer wins. What do they win, Luke?
You get to not feel like a crushing failure.
Very good. And Luke, what is your buzzer?
Oh.
And Noah, what's your buzzer?
Beep, 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 beep.
And so my question for you both is, what is the title of that paper I've been talking about?
Beep, 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 beep.
Noah, again, you have to beep before you buzz in, and you cannot answer in Morse code. But I'll give you this one. What is it?
Dysregulated, not deficit.
Ding, ding, ding!
Hey,
wow!
Well done!
Yes. Good job! It only took you 3 tries!
Ooh, so now say something mean to yourself, there. Luke. Look into this reflective spaceship.
Okay. All right, I'm looking at my own reflection. You suck! You have no worth, and you couldn't even get that question quicker than Noah. What's wrong with you?
I love the implication that getting a question quicker than Noah is something quite easy to do.
Only because he'd failed twice.
Well, now I hope you both enjoy your rejection sensitive dysphoria. And I want to say thank you to some new patrons who I hope very much do not experience rejection sensitive dysphoria, because they're not being rejected, they're being accepted. So here are some acceptance sensitive good foria.
What?
It's like dysphoria, but it's good for you.
Thank you, Ollie Kurzlake / Kurzlake.
Thank you, Anton Grenzio.
And finally, thank you, Elfie McGee. Now, you might be wondering why there are so few patrons to thank this time. It's because we did the last patron episode less than a month ago, and we're recording this one in advance. So thank all of you new patrons. And next time we thank some new patrons, there will hopefully be a lot more. But that is all from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producers Nito and Glitch Rabbit, and thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday, and why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCupfold everywhere.
You can follow me at NoOffence everywhere, except Twitter, where it's NoOffenAdams, and TikTok's where it's the NoOffence.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
See ya.